Would you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. I'm Kylie Lutz, and I am the singer-songwriter behind Pedal.
And you are immediately willing to use your surname, too, like your real name.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to just be Pedal, huh?
I feel strange to say that
sometimes. Yeah. You go up to somebody on the street, and you're like, hi, my name is Pedal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You don't do that.
No.
That's wrong.
Yeah. Like, there's very few people who can pull that off, and they've all done it.
You'd have to do it in a certain voice. I don't know what that voice would be, though.
Oh, God.
Can you imagine? What would the Pedal voice be?
It'd probably be like,
hi, my baby's Pedal. Yeah.
It's like really.
And then it'd be like, Pedal? You're like on a bicycle?
Oh, people, yeah.
Because otherwise you'd go Pet-tol.
It's T, yeah, but I have a terrible, terrible Scranton accent, so D's sort of don't.
New album, Defying Stereotypes. Mom was a choir teacher. First song at 10.
Mm-hmm.
You were in Scout, which is a great segue to launch right into acting and music. Are both equally cathartic for you?
Yes.
Are they cathartic in different ways, or is it all performing to you?
It's different. Yeah. So for acting, for me, I get a chance to be something I'm not, but tap into the things that character has that also live inside of me. So maybe I'm playing someone who's a little angry or a little, I don't know, just generally different in disposition than I am. So I get to kind of outlet certain things into that, and I'm allowed to analyze as much as I want. I can tear a script apart, and it's encouraged. But with my music, it's very, very personal. It feels like me without any sort of...
So you're not acting. So was Freddie Mercury an actor? Right? That becomes a question, doesn't it?
I don't think so. I mean, like, I think there's a persona you put on stage. Some people do that. I don't when I'm playing my music. But when I'm doing a play, obviously I'm playing a character. But it's more about the catharsis is different, very different.
But do you think there's an expectation of the audience for you to be someone you're not sometimes?
Sure, yeah. I mean, you know, I think anytime you get on stage and people are seeing you in person versus listening to the record, they probably have an idea in their head of what to expect. But, you know, for me, I pretty much keep it the same as if you were talking to me in the van.
Which we are.
Not too different. But.
So let's just go right there. Part of being mentally healthy, mm-hmm. notice I added a Y on there,
mm-hmm.
is figuring out who you are. And there are some things clinically you can't do anything about. But I would say if I were to pick a weird number, that 72.6% of artists in some way, shape, or form pull their art from depression, anxiety, all of that. And the way that you are portrayed in almost every one of these conversations, it's just kind of like mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
How can we get beyond that and explain to people that and particularly people who are going to look up to you
mm-hmm.
for advice and all the things that we're going to go into? Is there a way that when you actually talk about it to close friends, that there's a more interesting, I don't want to say interesting, a more definitive way to portray what you go through in life to get to then make songs like this?
Sure. I mean, there's certain choices I make as a person in terms of like omissions and interviews and things like that. In a lot of interviews, I say specifically, like, these are the disorders I have. These
right.
are the experiences that I have.
Right.
I can't speak specifically for other people. I can only speak for myself. And so I talk about it because I know that when I had something to look to or someone to talk to about what I was experiencing, it was really helpful. Or you know, I didn't have a ton of examples or of musicians or people in art that I looked up to who publicly talked about that stuff. So,
and it's kind of weird to say looked up to, right? Because
mm-hmm. I don't have it figured out.
Yeah.
So I don't.
And neither did they, by the way, because no. having worked mm-hmm. with as many as I have over the years.
No.
And being close to people, you know, who are, it's kind of like, mm-hmm. you know, it's not about that.
No, it's not. And I mean, I think a lot of people, too, think that, like, talking about mental illness now is this, like, hip thing that you want to write about. But
this
it's like,
I'm
not profiting off of this,
this
trust me.
This is what I'm trying to get to.
But the biggest, here's my thing, is if people are like, a lot of people and musicians are writing about this stuff, the concern shouldn't be like, are they all hopping on the train? It should be like, wow, look at all these artists who are underpaid and without access to healthcare, like, and how come they're all suffering? So that's my response to that question is, like, I don't think it is us commoditizing anything. I think we have to be vocal about it because otherwise nothing gets better. Nothing changes.
Two different points of view on coming out on some of your songs, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. This record is kind of really beyond personal when it comes to, you know, these discoveries,
mm-hmm.
right? And you talk about the fact that your parents knew it before you did.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about that. Tell me what it's like.
Yeah.
Was it comforting to know that your parents knew before you knew, or was that disconcerting?
I mean, a little bit. I mean, I didn't feel scared to tell them necessarily. I think it just took me a long time to realize that.
What was your biggest fear? I mean, what is it in a society that we live in these days where I can tell you that the last three female artists I talk to
mm-hmm.
are, right? And in mm-hmm. a society where there's almost, it's not that there's an expectation, but it's kind of like whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What were the really four demons in your mind?
That people wouldn't believe me. Or that,
really, belief?
Yeah, I don't know. Because I had a hard time believing it for myself. So then I was maybe, like, searching for that in others. And probably that it would screw up my relationships and my life personally. You know, when you're closeted for 25 years and you see other people who've, you know, navigated all that very early, you feel a little late. And then I was worried about it seeming like a trendy thing, like I was just like hopping on some sort of train, and that was nerve-wracking too, because in my career, like, I write about what I want to write about, and I don't necessarily want to seem topical because it's just my
life. For the sake of profit.
Yeah, it's just my life, you know. So those are the things I was really concerned with. Just, you know, that imposter syndrome type stuff.
And great segue. See, sometimes these just go right in order. You don't want these things to rise above the music. You want the music to stand on its own.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how does that work when the music is so personal?
Yeah, that's a real challenge. I've been thinking about it a lot. Like, maybe next album needs to be a concept record. I don't know. I mean, like, I guess in the sense that people can attach whatever meaning to it that they want. I know what it's about for me. And I'll talk about what I'm willing to talk about, I guess. So, yeah, it's all a learning curve. I'm still trying to find the balance of that.
So talking about knowing what it's all about, your producer, Will, did the last record. But this mm-hmm. time you went in and you had learned, you had a point of view. So tell me mm-hmm. about, like, a first couple of conversations where you call him up and you go, hello, Will,
mm-hmm.
I've got the new songs. Mm-hmm. I want to make another record. However,
mm-hmm.
what was that like?
It was great. He's so down.
Right, so what were some of the things
anything.
You said to him?
Yeah,
though?
Well,
because this is a guy who you put your inherent trust in the first time around when you didn't know as many ropes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Right, and I trusted him then, and I trusted him even more on the second time around, because he didn't push. He like let me grow into the musician that I am at this point, which is really great. And so I sent him demos that I just recorded on my cell phone because I don't have good recording equipment or anything like that at home. And he was just like, this is great. And I was like, I don't want to do anything too crazy. I want to keep it simple. And I want it to sound like this. And he was just down instantly.
So what's the definition of too crazy? I mean, he's a, you know, he's done great rock albums, mm-hmm. but little be known, he's also a major hip hop guy.
He is. Yeah. So
and hip hop is all about grabbing those beats mm-hmm. and getting those vocals to work.
Right.
So when I listen to this record, I can totally equate the sound to that side of the world equally to the rock and roll world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so a little less polish on the guitars and the vocals in terms of like crazy amounts of comping and things like that, just like getting in the room, live takes, whole takes, and keeping the drums super crisp and the vocals really forward in the mix. And like that's how he recorded those types
and
of records.
You did it live
too,
with no reverb, but then mm-hmm. but then where was it? Was it in the mix that suddenly that lovely famous 50s spring reverb echo
for the most part, if I'm correct, and Will, let me know if I'm wrong, but
Will, listen, but, this is for accuracy, Will.
But we, so if the vocal mic was here, we would have other mics set up 4 feet away and then 10 feet away. So most of the reverb was just naturally
so was
recorded
all
in the room.
Yes. I see. That's important, though.
Right.
So
and that's what I wanted.
Mix. It really was that way.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know.
That's cool.
That was the intention. I was like, I want everything to be as live and real as possible.
What's the filter for a pedal song? How do you know that it is a pedal song?
I guess strong melody lines come first for me. I like knowing that there's something to grab onto.
So hooks.
Hooks.
Hooks are good.
Yeah, hooks are good.
Hooks are great.
I like to have like some strange chord changes. Like I like to play around with theory and see how much I can stretch my ear and other people's ears past being uncomfortable and before letting a chord resolve or something like that. So key changes.
So you know what? I realize that nowhere does anybody ask you this. Where did you learn to play and where did you learn to write music?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I started studying classical piano when I was 5. So I was a trained pianist. I went to college for it. And then I started writing songs. I guess apparently when I was like 3, I would just sit and sing and make up a song for 20 minutes or so. And my dad would be like, okay, that was great. Like kind of trying to get me to stop because it was annoying. But then I would remember every single word. I'd be like, you want me to do it again? And I would just keep singing. So I've been writing songs before I could really like write them down physically. I just knew that was something you could do.
But you are classically trained.
Yes.
See, and that's something that I don't know why I haven't seen much about.
Yeah,
that.
I guess it's not interesting. I think it is really interesting.
Hello, classically trained pianist. You're sitting in the van with him.
God. Yeah, I mean, yeah. For my parents, it was like, this is the way you're going to get into college. So, like, we should really try and keep going with this. And I was like, well, I don't really know if this is
what
I want.
That's not the right motivation. At what point did you realize that your generation, for some reason, decided that seeing musicians was a really great place to have a party?
Oh, boy. I mean, I don't know if I can speak on behalf of my entire
group. I'll be facetious about the
group,
generational part,
but
it is ironic, you have to admit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, here's the thing. There's always going to be someone at a show trying to have a chat, and that's unfortunate.
No, but there's a chat.
And a loud chat.
And then there's like...
While you're playing
solo.
So
anyway, I was... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And here's the thing. Like, I used to feel bad. I would take it personally. Blah, blah, blah.
Now you stop the show.
Now I'm just like, I can stand here all day. I taught, you know, daycare. You know, I used to sit and wait for
it's kind of the same.
A bunch of 3 and 4 year olds to just kind of silently recognize that I was.
So do you literally, because there was.
I'll hang on a cord and I'll wait. If you want to have a chat, like, I always just say, like, let's meet at the bar after the set. I'm happy to have a chat, but like, not right now.
Do you wake up in the morning and can you ascertain that things are going as well as they are? That people are embracing the record? Yeah.
No. Yes and no. But mostly, like, I don't know, like, I mostly am just scared it can go away at any second.
Oh, too. Yeah, but everything can.
I think I'm aware, but I also don't want to get cozy.
Too aware.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. That kind of stuff is fleeting, and you can't be sure.
It is.
But it feels like I found my sound, at least, and that people are responding to
right.
it.
Right. So, I mean, you've said this, but I want to just confirm. This is a go-to record for people. This is an album. This is something that you can, and you really, I hope you know that you set out to make a record and that it became a record. It's
Thank
not
you.
An easy go on Spotify and say, oh, I'll just play that song.
Just you let kinda it, gotta, that one single, right.
You kind of got to let it go through the motions.
Exactly right. Yeah, that's what I wanted. I wanted something that people could revisit as it throughout their life, and a different song might resonate with them than when it first came out, you know what I mean? And that maybe lyrically you come back to it and it lands differently over time. But yeah, definitely didn't want to make something that was just like single, 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 fluff. I wanted it to be songs, side A songs I wrote before I started intensive therapy, and then songs that I wrote after I was in recovery.
I have not heard that anywhere
Side
else.
B.
That's intense.
Yeah, so then the flow kind of came after that. So in the timeline, there's songs that are... Side A is called Tightrope Walker, and Side B is called Miracle Clinger. And so, yeah, some of the songs I wrote when I was 15, and then some of the songs I wrote right before we went into the studio. And so, you know, each side is a different part of my life, a different chapter of my life, where it was like before I got help and then after I got help.
What do you think it's going to be like 20 years from now when you put this record on and you kind of look back and go, hey, how about that?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully I'll...
I mean, how many people really get to document their life this intensely?
I don't know. I mean, I feel lucky, but I hope that I'll sit back and be like, oh, I remember thinking that I was never gonna get through that, and here I am now. I got through it, you know. I hope that I still catch myself thinking that sometimes. I'm like, damn, like,
I've got a sold out show and I'm sitting in a van in front of the venue. What the hell?
I'm still living. Yes. So I hope that that's the case, and that maybe I have a house and maybe a kid or two or something.
I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich.
Okay.
And here's what it is. It's two of your songs on the outside as the bread,
mm-hmm.
and then songs by others in between.